Hey guys, welcome to Finally Clicked, the podcast where we discuss business, leadership, and personal development. My name is Margaret Smith, and I'm the Director of Operations for Pickett Street Properties, a real estate team out of Bothell, Washington. And I'll be here every week with our owner and team leader, Jesse D. Moore. We'll be digging into concepts and ideas that have helped us both personally and professionally. And you'll also get a chance to hear from local and national experts that we know provide massive value to get to the point where it all finally clicks.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming to our podcast. I am Jesse Moore, owner, founder of Pickett Street Properties, real estate sales team in Bothell, Washington. I'm joined by
Margaret Smith.
And who are you, Margaret Smith?
The mic. I'm the director of operations for Pickett Street Properties, along with Jesse here in Bothell, Washington.
All right. Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this, Margaret?
That's a good question. I think for a couple different reasons. I think we have found, at least from what I've witnessed over the last 6 years being here, that we grow the most and we have the most fun when we incorporate something like this into our jobs. It makes every day is fun, and we get to talk and build rapport with people from around the country and build our knowledge through others. And so I think that's our hope, is to be authentic and vulnerable, and by doing this, create more interaction.
Yeah, I think a lot of people know me separate from you and know you separate from me, but don't really know how we interact.
No. Or that's a big mystery for a lot of people.
Or why we work together.
Yes.
And I think, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to people seeing kind of behind the curtain to see what makes us work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest part of this podcast, honestly, is you have quite the social media following. Mm-hmm. And people are leaning in on you a lot and asking you questions. And we really want to just provide a format where people can have their questions answered by both of us.
Yeah.
And really, for those who maybe don't know who we are, what I mean by that is that as the owner of a business, I hire employees. How do you keep employees around? Mm-hmm. How do you keep turnover low? How do you keep them feeling motivated and inspired and moving forward? And good days and bad days and everything in between. Mm-hmm.
Totally. And I, just to start off we were talking about what should the name of this podcast be. And there's a lot of different names we could go with, but we want to make sure that it communicates well to the audience. So we're going to ask for your help and see if there's something that you think comes to mind as you listen to us.
Well, if it's supposed to communicate well, then you shouldn't come up with the name.
Most likely not.
Why is that?
Because I tend to communicate in my own language.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's something we need to talk about on a podcast sometime.
Yeah.
Your language and how unique and different it is compared to, you know, English.
Just not even English. It's just my own. Yeah. Language.
Well, and to give everyone an example, I think the first time I had breakfast with you, you ordered eggs easy over.
Yes, I did.
And I looked at you like a crazy person, and I said, what are you talking about? Because it's not easy over. It's over easy.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that from, but easy over is not.
But you looked at me like completely befuddled, as if this was an everyday thing.
Uh-huh, absolutely. Hmm. Yeah. That'll be a really interesting podcast.
So should we talk about some of the names we're considering?
Yeah.
All right.
Good idea.
One of them is Easy Over.
The Easy Over.
And I'm against that because it doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Well, that might be why I'm for it. we've talked about, the fence. On the fence.
Because?
But the fence is in our logo.
Right. So Pickett Street Properties, we have a picket fence as our logo. Mm-hmm. And so for branding and synergistic purposes, something about the fence might work. Mm-hmm. One of the things we came up with recently in brainstorming was finally clicked. It's something you said.
Because it did. It finally clicked.
Which I think that's kind of why I think it's the perfect name for this, is because I think most of the time it's us trying to figure each other out.
Yeah. And then when it clicks, it's like a light bulb going off, and I'm like, oh my God.
And as an English major, I love it because you can play with the words, right? So it's not like finally, mm-hmm. F-I-N-A-L-L-Y, mm-hmm. it finally clicked as like, thank God it finally happened.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also put it as finally as F-I-N-E-L-Y, mm-hmm. which means finely tuned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I like that the most because I think a lot of what we're going to be talking about is fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
Not totally. Broad strokes, but short strokes.
Yeah. And fine tuning every area in life, which like you mentioned, we're not going to just talk about real estate. It's going to be about personal development, all sorts of different things, books that we read, people that we meet, concepts that we want to talk about.
All right. So I would say finally clicked is in the lead right now,
mm-hmm.
but we would encourage you, if you're listening, to throw it in the comments or let us know what you think would be good for a name and if it makes sense, because we certainly aren't going to be objective.
No.
All right. What else can people expect from this?
We talked about some different ideas for segments, so we can give you guys an idea of what we're going to be bringing to the table. So there's a couple phrases and ideas that are kind of known when you join Pickett Street or when you've been on Pickett Street that words have meaning.
Yes.
That's something that Jesse says often. And so when you've been on the team for probably at least 2 or 3 months, you've heard it at least a few times.
So let's give everybody an example. When would I say words have meaning?
Probably the question is, when would you not say it? I think probably I've heard it the most in reference to when we're having a discussion. And prior to this, I've always been a very internal processor. And so when you asked me to externally process, I think in the beginning it was much harder for me because I didn't know how to process things and say them in a way that made sense to you. And so I would say whatever came to mind first, which is what happens. And oftentimes that can be something that isn't actually what I meant to say or might be hurtful or just come across in a way that isn't actually how I meant it to be. And so you would say words have meaning and I would say, well, this is what I meant. And so just being careful with your language and how you use it. It's pretty much like when it comes up, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like, I feel a little bit like I'm a car and I was made a certain way. It's like I don't know, like I would say.
Metaphors might have to be another segment.
All right, so like, let's just say there's certain types of pickups that had a part that would start the pickup on fire, right? And it was bad because it was manufactured that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to go in and alter it so that it wouldn't be destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as humans, we're made a certain way
mm-hmm.
that is very destructive mm-hmm. sometimes. And so my focus on words have meaning isn't entirely a good thing.
Mm.
In fact, I'm very exacting. I grew up in an exacting household. My father was a journalist and a writer, and I learned that philosophy from him. Words do have meaning, and if you are going to say them, you better know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to say them, you better have context, and you better be able to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use the wrong word, adapt, you know, mm-hmm. replace. And if you use the wrong word, then you're not an effective communicator. And mm-hmm. so quite literally, when I started saying that on the team, words have meaning, I was literally saying you can't say something and then expect me to to interpret it differently. Mm-hmm. Like when you say something, it has a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's how language works. And so I felt like, I feel crazy sometimes because I feel like people give themselves too much credit for independent thought
mm-hmm.
and they are too liberal with language.
You think they use words that, and they're like making up their own definition kind of?
Like easy over? Yes, absolutely. Like when people use words and accept them as a part of our lexicon when they're absolutely not, then I think that's
a
form of delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I'm very...
Do you think it's just laziness?
I don't know. I think it's probably a lot of entitlement. And I think people want to look better than they are.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to look smarter and everything else.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I'm very worried about in society is that I feel like we are not giving reality its due. I feel like we live in a crazy time
mm-hmm.
where people can just say that they're oppressed because they feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or people can say that they are traumatized because they feel that way, not mm-hmm. because anything happened.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I listened to a podcast recently where, you know, a very educated person, like a professor, made that argument that if someone felt like they were assaulted or victimized, then she would argue that they were.
Mm-hmm.
Despite reality being totally different, that they weren't, yeah, they weren't assaulted or they weren't victimized, but because they felt a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in, for instance, again, to be vulnerable and open, I don't let people in my house say the word triggered. Mm-hmm. It drives me nuts because it feels like an excuse to, it's like basically waving a flag that says, hey, I'm going to be a victim here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it when you tell me to make my bed because it triggers me.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, what do they call them? Not hot words, but it's like, hot, I forget what the term is. This is a good example of what Margaret does when she wanders for a word. But there's a lot of hot pop culture words that I think people get into the habit of using. And I think oftentimes some of the things that I've learned over the last couple years around learning and growing with you and working, not just with you, but with other people, is that you have to get outside of yourself and get outside of what you think society has taught you to do. And sit back if you're in the middle of an argument or discussion and just say, is it true? Is it really true? My body might be reacting in a certain way, or I might be feeling a certain way, but you have to be able to separate feelings from reality for sure.
Right.
And I think I can totally understand how words like triggered or, I know there's a lot of words in pop culture that are super hot to say, like.
Well, as you say that, it reminds me of something else that I don't like about it, and that is you're basically forcing your perspective on somebody without communication.
Sure.
When you use language like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, hey, that triggers me, mm-hmm, you're basically just you're vomiting your perspective on somebody else,
mm-hmm,
without being open and saying, hey, how can my perspective be different? Or, mm-hmm, what's your perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the keys with us and our relationship and how everything works on the team is staying in curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a lot about books that we read, and we're going to reference. We read a lot of books, and we are learning-based, and we use what we learn to improve our business and our communication. And one of the books that we'll talk a lot about is called Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because everyone misinterprets that book because of the title.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, hey, I need that. Like, I literally bought the book because I thought I needed to have an uncomfortable conversation with somebody. And the reality is that after I read the introduction in the first chapter, I realized the person I needed to have a tough conversation with was myself.
Why did you realize that?
You know, I think it's probably some youth and naivete. You know, when you're young, all you want to be is, you just want to be taken seriously, mm-hmm, right? And so that, I was no different. And so I think when you're younger, early 20s to mid 20s, I think you're so bent on proving the world wrong,
mm-hmm,
and saying, see, I told you so, I am this,
mm-hmm,
that I think that probably forces us to dig our feet in,
mm-hmm,
and not take the other person's perspective. I think we like to think we have the world figured out, mm-hmm, and
all makes you feel safe when you have it figured out.
And everything we know to be true is the absolute truth, and there, mm-hmm, can't be room for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just my perspective. I grew up in a very rigid household where there wasn't a lot of flexibility,
mm-hmm,
in dogma or doctrine or even ideation. Like, I couldn't even really talk about any ideas that were contrary to how I was raised.
So not really any support for thinking outside the box or
no,
developing who you were.
Or really even trying to understand why we believe the way that we did,
mm-hmm,
as defined through other people's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's just interesting to me. So Fierce Conversations, really then, for me, it opened up my mind to be, hey, there are other perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
How I look at the world through my filter isn't how everyone sees the world.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the best... I think one of the best analogies in there is looking at the world like a beach ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the orange stripe and you're on the green stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can yell at you and argue that the world is orange, mm-hmm, till I'm orange in the face. And that's not going to be your reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we're wrong. We're both right. we both own our own truth, mm-hmm. which that's getting to be overused and cliched. I just speak my truth. See, that's another thing. So speak your truth.
Word, yeah.
Speak my truth is just saying I'm going to force my perspective on you again. And I'm like, okay, bye. I don't want to talk to you. We've really learned that, right? Mm-hmm. We've really learned the benefit.
Entirely.
Of hearing what someone else's perspective is.
Hearing other perspectives. I think for me, the number one thing I got out of that book was it gave me my voice. And I was just talking to my roommate about this the other night. And because I sent this book to someone yesterday who's in North Carolina, and she reached out to me about a listing coordinator position. And what the conversation turned into was the fact that she knew she needed to let this person go. And she doesn't want to actually have the conversation. She just wants to let them go. And I said, okay, lady, like, I love you. I support you. I'm going to send you this book. I'm going to email you the dialogue ahead of time, and I want you to go have this conversation tomorrow, because part of our job, I believe, or our duty as a manager or an owner or just a human being in life is to actually have the guts to say something, to help that person constructively move on, constructively understand maybe where the errors were, the miscommunication was. Otherwise, we're just adding to the confusion and the lack of clarity. So I feel like Susan Scott really helped give me the ability to voice my opinion.
Well, that seemed... what you just told me, I don't have any reference other than what you just said. But it seems like it's in the wrong order mm-hmm. to fire someone without talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it would be necessary to talk to them to make sure that you have all the information. Mm-hmm.
All the information, yeah. There's a lot of fear behind, I think, maybe specifically more for introverted or internal processing people, but... I think in the beginning I was always afraid that what I would say would get misinterpreted, which it did in the beginning because I wasn't very good at it. And then there's a, maybe with introverts too, and I don't know if internal processors tend to be more introverts, but that's what I find. There's a fear-based piece to it too. And when we are talking with people that maybe are more extroverted, it could be intimidating. And so I feel like that's what Susan's book forced me to do it, which helped me get over the fear. So it's like getting past that fear piece is, I think, what she gave me. And this lady that I was talking to had a lot of fear around it. Like, and it's, is it, you go back to, is it true? Is it really true? What is there to be afraid of, really? It's confrontation, but confrontation doesn't have to be ugly.
No, it doesn't. I would have fired you 6 times over. If I had just fired you without talking to you first.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been many times where I've misunderstood something that mm-hmm. you said,
mm-hmm.
where I took great offense to something that you said and mm-hmm. you didn't mean it that way at all.
Mm-hmm. It happens, yeah. And that's the whole, I think people do wonder why I'm still here and why you didn't let me go in the beginning and why I haven't walked away. And what I've learned from this is that there's so much to gain by working through things. If you believe, when I talk to admin and they're thinking about leaving, I say, do you believe in the vision of your leader still? And if they say yes, then I say there's still something to work at then. If you don't believe in the vision, then that's a different story. But if you believe in the vision, then there's some hard work to be done with communication. And that's like, that's my, where I start with them.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's some other points to consider there. One is that you've locked the time to figure this out, to figure out our communication style and to the point where we can now speak each other's language mm-hmm. better. Mm-hmm. And do you want to go do that again mm-hmm. is one thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is the autonomy. Just, mm-hmm. and we'll talk a lot about autonomy on this podcast, I promise you,
mm-hmm.
Because it's a big thing with me and it's a big thing with Margaret. But you know, I the only way I can keep someone like Margaret around is by making sure that she's autonomous
mm-hmm.
and that I don't micromanage you and tell you what to do and you don't feel like you're ever confined to a box,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on about fierce conversations and all the topics that it brings up. That'll definitely be.
And I think there would have been a day I might have taken offense to you saying, people wonder all the time why I'm still here.
Well, and I think also when I reference that, when I say that, what I mean behind that more is that it's not just me. There's people that have in this industry, specifically in real estate, it's so short-lived. Admin usually only stay for a year. Agents on a team, when it comes to a team, maybe only stay to 2-3 years on average. So there are very few director of operations or admin-oriented people that have been on their team for more than 5 years. And so it's not just me, it's other people too. Like, it's just a conversation to be had.
And I think that's really one of the things we kind of want to peel the curtain back on, right? Is what makes people leave,
mm-hmm.
you know, what makes good administrators leave,
mm-hmm.
what makes them stay. And I think the best part of this podcast that we're really trying to benefit other people with is the different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm approaching this as the perspective of the owner of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stress and everything that comes with that. And also the freedom, mm-hmm. right, of leverage and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And you're coming at it as someone who is supporting my role and my vision and implementing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found in our classes that we've taught independently and classes that we've taught together, and then just in conversation, you know, so many conversations with people that reach out to us asking us
mm-hmm.
for help,
mm-hmm.
is that there is a wide divide between rainmakers or business owners and their right-hand person,
mm-hmm.
who is supposed, their director of operations, their EA, executive assistant,
mm-hmm.
or the AE, assistant to the executive.
Mm-hmm.
There is a huge divide in communication between these people, and quite honestly, it makes business owners not want to hire admin,
mm-hmm.
and it makes admin not want to work for those business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's what those are the people we want to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So besides book reviews.
Well, book reviews sound boring.
Book discussions, book, I don't know, exploration. We're also going to be talking to some people that we find fascinating, or people that inspire us, that kind of delve into those subjects that we just talked about, but quite possibly all over the board when it comes to personal development. So I think one of the things that I know my family and friends are still continuously mystified about is how much personal development we do and how much I've changed over the last 6 years since I've been here. And so talking a little bit about that, I hope will apply not only to people in those roles, but just regular everyday people that are wondering what it's like to work in real estate or what it's like to work on our team and why we do what we do, because it's not just about real estate.
Yeah, this podcast will not just be about real estate, for sure. I would not be interested in that. Margaret and I love people. We're fascinated by people. And I think people are the most interesting when they're multidimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm easily bored. I don't want to talk to somebody about real estate all day long. I kind of want to learn what's behind everything, their motivation and what they do in their free time and mm-hmm. what gets them excited and passionate
mm-hmm.
and authentic. Those are the things we care about.
Mm-hmm.
I've always cared about passion and authenticity from day one. That's one thing that's never changed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about all sorts of things. You guys just wait.
We're going to talk about Jesse's pet peeves.
Yeah.
Things that bug you.
People don't know. Well, maybe they do. Maybe that's the one thing people do know is how opinionated I am.
Yeah. Well, you talked the other day about, I forget where we were, but how important it is just to have an opinion.
No, it's not a big...
Yeah.
I tell people, I coach other real estate agents, other business owners, and for people just starting out, one of the things I tell them is just have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be right,
mm-hmm.
but just be... Just have conviction when you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it's better if it's right. So figure out what it is that you want to say and then say it and stand behind it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if someone's hiring you to be a real estate agent, they expect you to have an opinion.
Yep.
They don't want you to go, oh, so what's the market like? And then you go, well, you know, man, it's different. I don't really know. I don't have a crystal ball. You know, that's not really what they want. What they want is they want to hear you say, you know what, it's tough right now, or it's a great time to buy.
Yeah.
But I don't think that this window is going to be open for long, and I expect it to close in February and March, and then I think it's going to get busy again.
Mm-hmm.
That says something.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I don't know, we'll just have to wait and see, you know, and I just think... A lot of real estate agents give other agents a bad name.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Because they aren't experts, and because they don't try to be experts, and because they just are hoping to put a sign in the yard and have other people sell their homes.
Yeah, or like the what everybody says, who do you know that needs to buy, sell, or invest right now? And we talked about how that's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Like, you can't want to buy, sell, and invest all the time. Like, right. It's the best time right now. Thing to do right now is buy.
It is, right? Yeah. Like, I totally agree with that. Like, I hate agents that are always like, it's always a good time to buy or sell. And right now, I wouldn't encourage people to sell unless they, and there's reasons for selling that I would totally encourage you to do it. Mm-hmm. But it is a very good time to buy right now. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating because we're trying to get that message out. And the reality is people don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. So they wait to identify trends that make them feel good, make them feel better, like they're not making a bad decision. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they spot that trend, that market's gone. Mm-hmm. And now they don't have the same leverage that they had they listened to us.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's another concept we could talk about that you just mentioned in there. Like, don't always do what you think the whole crowd's doing, like the whole kind of mob mentality idea. That sometimes you have to sit back and check your own thinking and say, not just with real estate, but with anything in life, is this my decision? Is this something that I've come to think of? Or am I just going based off everybody else's opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's super true. I hear things all the time that I, you know, throw against the back of my brain and decide if I believe that is true or not. Mm-hmm. And if it's going to be part of my conversation or not moving forward. Yeah.
What's like something that you think you've applied in your life lately, a new idea or concept that stuck to the back of your brain?
That somebody else maybe showed me or taught me. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm engaged, and one thing that I think Jill has taught me is that, well, wow, we're going to go right into vulnerability right away. I would say that I definitely had a fear of abandonment all my life until I turned, probably until I went to therapy, probably after my separation, after my divorce, you know, because I think abandonment kicked in to a high degree during that time. Mm-hmm. And then really I had to go to therapy to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then I met my fiance after about 2.5 years of therapy, and that relationship developed naturally. But then when the fight started to happen, like, we didn't fight for like 8 months, 9 months. And then at the first fight, I thought it was the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be, you know, this person's going to be, and it's not even like an active thought in my head that goes, oh, they're leaving. It's not like that. It's just everything in my body responds that way. Mm-hmm. And so she'd be like, whoa, hang on. Like, why are you reacting so passionately? Why are you responding in such a kind of out of balance way? Mm-hmm. And then what she's taught me, that's I had to test, throw in the back of my brain and test over time, was, hey, yeah, I don't have to act like the world is falling every time somebody's upset with me or every time I misread a situation. Or every time I fail to consider someone else's perspective, and that how that has become fruitful in my life is it really created a sense of urgency in me that I had to fix everything right away, and part of that's good, right? In my business life, that can be helpful for me to fix something before it becomes a big deal. Mm-hmm. But in my personal life, you know. And actually, my relationship with you is a great example of that. You remember when, at the beginning, and I would force you to tell me what was wrong before you knew what was wrong. Mm-hmm. So then you would say things that weren't even true.
Yeah.
And then now we had a whole nother problem to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it would take 5 to 7 days, probably. 5 to 10 days, it would take you time to really work through your internal thought process to where we could have a conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was, again, that fear of abandonment probably put me in a place where I'm like, I can fix this as long as you tell me what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And you being an introvert made that very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm. So Jill's kind of helped you with that too, like just realize that you can stay and talk through it and work through it and don't have to panic as much.
Well, I would correct what you said. I'm not staying and talking about it because that's what I want to do. I love communicating. I feel like I can solve any problem with my words. The problem is me having to sit and be silent and wait for the other person to be ready. That is torture for me, or it used to be torture for me. And now I've come to accept that, hey, you can wait till the next day. And I've learned how to soothe myself. I've learned how to meditate myself down. I don't meditate every day, but I have used meditation as a tool to stop myself from flooding emotionally or for stopping myself from becoming irrational.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of what you say reminds me of that podcast I was telling you about that Susan Sarandon spoke on, Oprah's Masterclass. And she talks about relationships and how essentially we have to think of them differently. I think when in the times when we were growing up, and when Susan was growing up, it was different too. It was always like this end game. You got to a place where you felt like you got married, whatever, and then you were done. You were done working on it. You were there. And she's like, that's the wrong way to think about it. It's a constant iteration. She's been married just once, but has had three different relationships that were significant in her life. And she talks about just that, how it's a constant. You should think of it as a constant rather than just this place you arrive at.
Well, it's like working out. If you stop working out, you'll notice the differences right away. And that's why you have to maintain it. Anything that is worth doing is worth doing well and often, you know. And if you're a great example of that. You know, you really do. You've become someone totally different than when you first came here, and you're highly regimented. You always push forward. You're developing new habits, and you're leaving the ones that don't serve you behind. It's inspirational.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, one of the I think I was telling you about Hal Elrod's book that I'm reading right now with some of the girls, Miracle Morning. Something came up this morning that I was actually going to tell you about called The Gap Focus. And it talks, I related to it so much.
Is this about thigh gap?
Oh my God, no. Thigh gap, which is not happening in most people's lives. Anyway, but gap focus is about when you're in that spot in life or business where you're in the spot where nothing's really happening. Something happened before and you're like, when's the next thing going to happen? And most of the time, above average people are constantly trying to make that next thing happen. And whereas average people are just like, I'll just sit here in the middle until something happens to me. And he was talking about how it's actually a healthy balance. You should be somewhat satisfied with where you're at, so that you feel some sort of sense of peace. But understand that to keep working towards the end of the gap, there is also a realistic thing.
I often wish I could be average.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. There's nothing in me that wants to be average, but I wish.
Just to have more peace of mind?
Just to have the. I mean, I'm always thinking. I'm always trying to figure something out. And when the entire market is changing, and I'm trying to outthink the market, man, that is cumbersome. And so, yeah, I mean, sometimes I wish I could just play Xbox all day long.
I've heard that from people, but I don't actually really think average people are happy.
Maybe they're happier than above, like, and we should call them average people. Probably.
Well, the people that are not like,
well, let's paint a picture.
Growth. Yeah.
The real estate market, it is, mid-October. The real estate market is going to slow down. And yes, you can talk to people who are going to be contrary to that, but let's just, for the sake of argument, say that there are fewer homes sold between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And really, we're waiting for the new year for a lot of market activity to spike again. So a lot of agents have this mentality, and they take December off. And they go on vacations, and you see pictures of them in Cancun or Italy or wherever. And that is their planned time to be like, you know what? I'm not going to make money. I'm going to do this instead.
Yeah.
And maybe they work somewhere else seasonally. Maybe they play Xbox on their couch all day. Okay. I can't do that. I just can't. I wish I could. But I just have a bigger picture, bigger desires, And I can't do nothing. I have to be doing something. And so it's challenging when the market seems to be operating outside of my will and I have to try to figure it out. But, you know, thank God I have that desire. For me, I'm thankful for it because it means I have to adapt.
Yeah.
And it means I have to be creative. And I love being creative and I love doing new things. And that's probably why.
Yeah. If you didn't love doing that, it'd be much harder to pivot and do different things when the market's changing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to give myself too much credit. It's easy. There are many times during the day I am average or below average. And, but I'm not happy with that. And so I correct it pretty quickly. I think my hardest part is my brain, my head, and getting internalizing. As you know, getting, you know, when I get into my head, it's hard for me to get out of that cycle of thought that may not be helpful.
It's like you call, that one guy calls it a habit loop. Just the habit of going into your head and focusing on certain things.
So what did you learn from this gap? What was it called?
The gap focus.
Yeah. What's your overall, what'd you walk away with from that? I mean, if it sounds like the 2 points were there are people that are always looking to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Right. And then there are people that just settle in. So what's the, what'd you learn?
I think my number one takeaway is that I'm doing a good job and I have to give myself some more credit that I'm pushing forward in the ways that I can. I'm not just sitting around and doing nothing about anything, right? I'm making steps towards things that I have been wanting to do and I'm not sitting in total just...
Well, let's give them an example of that. What have you done recently
to push
the ball forward?
Specifically, I realized that I really haven't done anything else outside of, well, it's hard to phrase that that way, but I've been doing all sorts of things for personal growth, but I've never done anything in the morning consistently, and I've never really actually journaled, meditated, visualized. I visualized back in high school for basketball practice, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't super focused. So I started doing the Miracle Morning 10 days ago. And so that's silence, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. Every single day for an hour, 10 minutes each, I've never done that in my entire life. And so based off of what Hal has said, there are, I trust that his research is complete and that I've heard all sorts of positive things about meditation, visualization, affirmations, reading, and journaling. And I do reading really well. I've always done reading well, and I've just switched from reading like random fun books to reading more personal development books when I started here, and I saw a difference. And so I figured if I see the difference in that one thing, if I added in these five other things, I'm really curious to see what happens.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wanted to make sure that we touched on that, that, like, even in the last week, you have done another...
Well, this is my addiction.
Another life hack.
Yeah, so I'm not addicted to alcohol, thank God. I'm not addicted to drugs. I'm, as Jesse knows, I'm a fairly naive person, in general, fairly innocent because of my upbringing. And so what this has done in the last 6 years is it sped up my desire and my addiction to personal growth. And so if I'm not doing something, I actually get angry is what I've realized. So I have to calm that and focus that energy towards something. And if I can't control other people, I can at the very least control myself and what I'm doing. So it's helped a lot.
And so this Miracle Morning is the latest iteration of that.
This is the latest iteration.
And
yes.
You said something yesterday that I thought was intriguing about it. Like that you're already... and you just mentioned it, but I want to be specific. Like, you're already addicted to this. You're already addicted to getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and following this process.
I'm addicted to the peace it brings me already. And I don't know if I'm just making that up or if that's but reality, but I feel that's what I feel, right? And I'm trying to connect my feelings
to that. So let's qualify what addiction means, since words have meaning. Addiction, what you're talking about is that this is now something that's important to you and you're not going to sacrifice moving forward.
Yeah, correct. I'll be getting up at 4:55 a.m. for the next 20 days, no matter what.
Well.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. I've never gotten up really before 7 o'clock. I've always been a morning person, and Christina Jaggles is like, what's a morning person mean? And it means I'm most productive in the morning. I totally believe that, and that a lot of studies show that we should do our lead generation in the morning, that we should do our hardest activities in the morning, and I fully support this. But now I know that by getting up earlier and spending some time on myself, that's going to bring me additional concentration, I think, and more success in my morning overall.
At the most successful time in my life, I was getting up at 4:45 in the morning.
All right, so I need to increase it by 10 minutes.
I had to drive somewhere to go work out. That's why. But and often with my coaching clients, one of the main things we focus on first, right out of the bat, is their morning schedule. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have enough business, then the first thing we change is their morning schedule.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I was intrigued by. One of the reasons Hal became an inspiration to me was that he's had some major things happen in his life. He died for 6 minutes when he was 20, I believe. He got cancer when he was 30. And then he was in debt, like $465,000. And he called up one of his best friends in business and said, "What should I do? You're really smart. What should I do?" And the guy said, "Are you working out?" And Hal was like, "What the hell do you mean? Am I working out? What does that have to do with business?" And he said, "If your mind's not right, you're not going to be able to think creatively for a solution." And so that really got me thinking. I do so much during the day, and I know that I inspire people. I know that what I'm capable of, but I don't actually think I know what I'm actually really capable of. And so that's what I'm hoping this will reveal. So,
yeah, we certainly have limitations in our brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
totally.
We think we can do this, but we can't do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was we were talking about this yesterday, and I just started working out regularly again. I have a bad back, and it flares up, and it's bad at times, and other times it feels fine. And but I've made working out a priority again, and I haven't made it working out in the morning a priority yet. But I'm realizing the more I work out, the more I need to move it to the morning, because I feel so much better after I work out. Yeah. And so, like, yesterday was a bad day for me. I wasn't in a good headspace. And that was interesting to me, because then if I go home and work out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then I feel a lot better. Mm-hmm. But now I've made everybody suffer through the day with me until I've got to do this thing that I absolutely know will make me feel better.
Yeah.
And then I go, oh, yeah, that's why I got up at 4:45 in the morning before, mm-hmm. was to make sure that this happened. Mm-hmm. And then that feeling, that sense of accomplishment, that high from working out, the release of endorphins and mm-hmm. chemicals in my brain mm-hmm. that help me feel up and positive and confident mm-hmm. are now carried throughout the day instead of being an after dinner treat.
Yeah. Well, I think I've been in denial personally, because I love my sleep so much, but I actually haven't been sleeping well like the last 3 years. And so what's the other thing that's happened over the last 10 days is I'm so exhausted by the time I get home. I'm in bed by 9:30 and I put on a meditation app and I'm out within probably 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's actually, that's another relief that I forgot about, is that I used to listen to Fierce Conversations actually on tape for like a year and a half at night. Cause if I woke up and I heard Susan's voice just going, it would take me back to sleep. But now I don't need to do that. So the morning I think I was just in denial because I didn't want to get up that early, just because I didn't want to get up in the dark. I know it's hard those first 5 minutes to get up, but then once you're up, it's like, it's amazing how it affects your body and your mind. It's crazy. And is that just because it's just right after sleep?
What's that?
Why is it that the morning is such a good time for all of this? Is it just because we just spent 7 hours recuperating?
Well, I am a sleep scientist. No, I have no idea. I mean, I like, other than what I just explained to you, which is that by doing it in the morning and getting it out of the way, I am better for it.
Yeah. Know? It feels better to go throughout your day knowing that part's done.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I think it's easier to talk to, like, you do hot yoga a lot in the evening. Mm-hmm. And how many times do you think you talk yourself out of it because
often.
You don't have the willpower
at
the end of the day
night,
that you have at the beginning of the day? Mm-hmm. You know, and I do know in willpower studies that they show the longer you try to sustain it, the worse you're going to be at it.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I don't have my lunch at, you know, between 11:30 mm-hmm. and 12:30, I make some really bad choices because somehow I think that by delayed lunch and the extent to my hunger now means I can eat whatever I want and I can eat a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And then I suffer the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking in my head now as you're talking about how I've got Mel Robbins' 5-second rule. It's how I get out of bed. Then I have Hal Elrod's miracle morning that I do. We need to name some sort of like habit or something to get in the group on this.
Some sort of life hack.
Yeah, a life hack that people can just pull out. I want to use Jesse Moore's
easy over life hack.
Yeah, the easy over life hack. Maybe that'll be another session. Yeah.
Well, this gives you an idea of what we're going to talk about, I guess.
I think this is a really good idea. Yeah.
And so this is something we're committed to doing, and we'll get better at it as we go. We're also going to be, at some point, we'll have this on YouTube as well. Mm-hmm. We're working on that. Mm-hmm. I want multiple cameras, though, not just one camera. So, but, and, you know, it's, there'll be delays, I imagine, because life happens, and I'm headed out of town, and other things are happening. But we're excited to do this. We've been talking about it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we just really want to people to have a look inside how our work relationship works, mm-hmm. and then talk about what we think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you guys have ideas or topics that you want us to talk about, you can submit those too, because I have a long list of ideas, and I know what people ask me about all the time when it comes to operations type questions and partnership questions. But if you have something you think we need to talk about, let us know.
And if we're going to be brutally honest and vulnerable, then you can do the same. And mm-hmm. tell us what worked. Tell us what didn't work about mm-hmm. today's podcast. And we'll take your notes seriously, mm-hmm. and we'll refine this as we go. We will have structure. That's why I hired Margaret in the first place, is mm-hmm. we will have a structure and an order to things. But we look forward to checking with you guys on a weekly basis. So
yeah,
we'll see you next week.
Have a good day.